I mean, we all know Tom Schmitz by now, but you may not know that he, what kind of degree was it from Yale?
DMA.
A DMA, which means what?
A Doctor of Musical Arts.
Doctor, so he has his doctorate from Yale, real slouch, you know.
Slouch, yeah.
He found two other people there who were pretty good too, and they formed a trio that they played all over the place. And now they're all retired and you're not playing anymore. We wanted to get you to.
Well, I'm retired. They're younger than me.
Oh, okay. But we're going to find all about what music is, what kind of hymnody is happening today in this session.
Well, I don't know if you're going to find out anything, because these are all pretty familiar, I think.
Oh, good.
An antidote to Monday. Yeah, my trio, which is violin, cello, and piano, which is called a piano trio for some reason, was together for 25 years and would still be together today, except the violinist and cellist got divorced. And I was sort of the glue binding the group together for a long time.
So they keep on using these rock bands, right? So.
Yes, well, our trio still didn't.
Okay. When Jefferson Airplane, they have divorced. Anyway.
Well, I know that some of the famous string quartets, I think Budapest one was one, that the guys played together for decades and they hated each other. So they all traveled separately, stayed in different hotels, would come to the concert, play a wonderful concert, and then. So, I just wanted to say a little bit about continuing from Monday, because the handout I gave you, we didn't get through all of it. We just got through the first page. But the third sheet of the handout are all the hymns by Martin Luther, which include quite a few more that were not in those first three hymnals. And there, we finally get to A Mighty Fortress, which everybody does know, and possibly a few others that you're more familiar with.
Can you briefly, the different tunes of A Mighty Fortress, how did that happen?
My favorite topic.
Good job.
The Mighty Fortress tune that everybody grew up with, and the other one.
Yeah.
And in my case, it's just the opposite, probably, of yours.
No, but I grew up in Missouri.
Well, then you grew up with what we would call the right one, yes. Everybody else grew up with the other right one. When Luther wrote the tune and notated it, he used notes with a stem and notes without a stem. The notes without a stem are longer notes, and with a stem are short notes, sort of like quarter notes and eighth notes. And the tune that he wrote and the rhythm for it is the one that's called the rhythmic version. It has a lot of that syncopation that I was talking about. So that's the original tune that he wrote, and it's called rhythmic because it has, you know, different length notes interspersed with each other. Along about the 17th and 18th centuries, all the rhythmic elements of those early 16th century hymns got ironed out so that all the notes became even. So that's why the other version is.
That's the correct one. The one we know.
Yes. Dum, bum, bum, bum. So, and that's the one that Bach used when he said it. Because by his day, they had all lost their original, we could say, rhythmic vitality. By that point, too, congregational singing had sort of slowed down and didn't have the there was a spirit of the bars, and even though I told you that that wasn't actually where I came from. Let's say the folk quality that has elements of dance in it, and that had sort of been erased as the Protestant church became older and more developed and everything became more familiar and it wasn't the brand new idea that it was in the 16th century. So anyway, those are those two versions.
Thank you.
And they're both great. I know that at St. Peter's, in New York, we alternated between the two versions because we had a lot of people, including me and the pastor, who were originally from the Missouri Synod, but we had a lot of people who were from the LCA and ALC as well, so they were used to the other version. So we tried to do both. And so we practiced tolerating each other's favorite versions. But anyway, the last page in the Schnibbel, there are some other important early Lutheran hymn writers, and they include Philip Nicolai, who lived from 1556 to 1608. So the next generation after Luther and his contemporaries, and he wrote two of the greatest hymns ever written, O Morning Star, How Fair and Bright, the Queen of Chorales, and then Wake Awake for Night is Flying. We'll call it the King of Chorales because that's a mighty fortress, but it's like that. And those were written in the second half of the 16th century, so they go way back. And then in the 17th century, we have the greatest German hymn writer, Paul Gerhardt, who wrote in a context of greatly troubled times and a troubled life. He lived during the 30 Years' War, so there was always unrest and tension going on politically, wars, battles being fought, there were a few outbreaks of plague and other diseases that took a lot of people. And personally, he had great losses in his own family life. And yet he wrote some of the most joyous of hymns, including Awake My Heart with Gladness, the great Easter hymn. But it's telling that the second line of that's 378. I'd like to just take a look at that one. Awake my heart with gladness, see what today is done. And then this is the line I wanted to point out. Now, after gloom and sadness. And of course he's patently talking about Jesus' burial and death. And after that gloom and sadness comes forth the risen, the glorious sun, the sun rising again. But I think he's also referring to his day and age and his life after the gloom and sadness that he had experienced and many of those others around him, that they would now rejoice with the resurrection of Jesus. The other part, verse 4, now I will cling forever. And this is someone clinging in desperation from all the horrible experiences he personally has gone through. Paul Gerhardt, some of the other hymns that he wrote, O Lord, how shall I meet you? The Advent hymn. A Lamb Goes Uncomplaining Forth, the Good Friday hymn, great hymn. O Sacred Head Now Wounded. Now Rest Beneath Night's Shadow, evening and morning. And then one which is actually one of my favorites, but no one sings, If God My Lord Be For Me. And then the last one is Johann Franck, who also lived in the 17th century. And he wrote Soul Adorn Yourself with Gladness and Jesus' Priceless Treasure. So those are really the core of what we call the Lutheran chorale heritage. And these are all ones which we sing today and are included in our hymnals. If you compare the Lutheran hymnals to other churches' hymnals, you'll see that they may have A Mighty Fortress and Jesus' Priceless Treasure, but not many others. So this is a unique part of our heritage, which I consider a gift, our Lutheran gift to the Church Catholic, in that the hymns are almost uniquely rich in their, not only in their theology and understanding of the gospel and of the Bible, but they are also rich in being able to connect it with the individual person and the personal experience. That's enough about that. Now, let's get on to today's topic. The hymn writers of today. This is interesting to me that we have so many gifted hymn writers starting around 1950 after World War II. And there were some before, but mostly after. Because if you go back to the earlier hymnals, the SBH, of 1958 and the Lutheran hymnal of 1942, there aren't really hard any contemporary hymns in them. All of them go back to the very early 20th century, which really is just an extension of the 19th century, and back beyond then. You don't see any great hymns from 1926. Or 1938 in those hymnals, because for whatever reason, people just didn't write hymns. And that's been true of the church throughout its history. There are certain ages when people are attracted, for one reason or another, to writing hymns. And those are often times of change and stress in the church. So I think that we just need to realize that we are the beneficiaries of a particular time in history when there are gifted hymn writers who have given us new expressions of our faith. Now we can look at the list that you have. Susan Briel, who knows Susan Briel? Yes. What can you tell me about her?
She was one of the directors here at Golden Village.
Yeah.
She was a campus pastor at Pacific Lutheran University, along with Dan Verlander at the same time in Korea.
Oh.
Married to Martin Wells, the newly retired bishop of Eastern Washington, Idaho. She's a great, gifted speaker.
Yeah, I only know her by listening to her at a couple events that I've been at where she has spoken. She's spoken to the Association of Lutheran Church Musicians several times. And my tongue is just hanging out after I hear her talk because her words are so rich and filled with imagery and personal as well. Such a gift we have in our midst, literally. But she hasn't written a lot of hymns, but she's written several that are in our hymnal. 469, By Your Hand You Feed Your People, with a tune by Marty Howden. Let's take a look at that.
Yeah, she's a good friend of Marty Howden, too.
I guess that.
Thank you.
sing through this?
Sure.
Ready. Yeah, this is one of the hymns centered around communion and the Eucharist. And Susan Briel and other hymn writers today have produced many Eucharistic hymns. And I think that has a lot to do with our reclaiming our Eucharistic heritage. I think most of us probably grew up in churches that had communion once a month or less. And now it's the norm to recognize it as the principal service every week and every festival as well. And this has been a time of great change in our worship life. And so I think that's one of the things that has called for hymns that talk about it and its meaning. Nice tune, isn't it? Yeah, I love this this hymn. I keep losing my sheet. Here's another Eucharistic one, 474, and another. Oh, really? I would believe that. The last time I heard her speak was at a convention where she was speaking about writing a new hymn with, who was the composer? It might have been Bob Farley, but it could have been Mark Cedillo, I'm not sure. The two of them were up there, and she talked about how she had written, talked with the composer about the form of the verse that she was going to use, and so she had written the first draft of it. And then there was a several-month process where she would talk about, well, there was this one word and turn of phrase that just didn't seem quite right, and she kept working on it and revising it and changing it until it seemed right. And also she went back and forth with the composer of the music and got his advice as well. And so they sort of worked together not only on the tune but on the text. But she took very seriously every single word that she wrote. So do you have any of you sung this next one, 474? You have? Okay. So let's not sing it.
It's so pretty, though. It's one of those things that during communion, when you're walking up and stuff, you can kind of still sing the refrain. And
yes, that's right. Yes, yeah. Let's just sing the refrain, okay?
Cindy needs comfort.
Third one, Holy God, Holy and Glorious, is the one that our choir sang at the Eucharist Sunday night. So let's take a look at that one, 637. Now, this one has a tune by Robert Buckley Farley, who recently retired as he was the director of music at Augsburg Fortress. He's written a number of wonderful tunes. But this is, although it's a little tricky, it's a beautiful tune, and I'd like to give you all a chance to sing it. So, interesting musically about it is that he goes back and forth between 3 beats and 4 beats per bar. And of course, it's never marked in the hymnal. So it just has a little sense of, I would call it musical interest, but it's just slightly off kilter sometimes because of that rhythmic structure. The text is very clear. Holy God, holy and glorious, verse 1. Holy and powerful, verse 2. Holy and beautiful, verse 3. Holy and only wise, verse 4. And then holy and living one. So a different aspect of this holy God. And as I mentioned to the choir, this is a takeoff on the trisagon, the thrice holy that goes back to the ancient church. Holy God, holy and immortal, holy and mighty. Holy God, holy and mighty, holy and immortal. I see this as an expansion of that, and a poetic expansion of the trisagon. And 701 is the last Susan Brielle hymn, and this uses a familiar tune. Okay, this is a takeoff of the psalm by the Waters of Babylon. We wept, but we were led into a place of dancing and gladness after our grief.
Wasn't this the first time that our hymnal had a section on lament?
It is. And you know, when I discovered this lament section, it couldn't have been. It wasn't called lament, but there were similar hymns in LBW. And it was after 9/11. I was choosing hymns, and I saw all of these hymns that we had that we had never sung, but the words were just right there, the words we needed to sing.
It was almost we didn't acknowledge we needed.
Exactly, yeah.
And then we did second duty.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The next composer, Herb Brokering. So tell us what, Darius, what Herb Brokering was like as a person.
He started out
professor.
my professor at Luther, the only class I ever took at Luther Seminary, but he says, you all have an A. You have to work really hard to work down from there. What he tried to do is just free us up from worrying about a grade and really be creative. And that was his creative education. You know, that's what, that was his goal. That was his task. So I did a photographic essay and got an A. But he was a wonderful, wonderful human being that has just the right amount of craziness.
Yeah.
Kind of like Brian.
I think his most famous hymn that we have is Earth and All Stars. So let's take a look at that, 731.
And I think that one's in the 1982 hymnal, Episcopalian.
Yeah, this is in the 1982 hymnal.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's got the right stamp of approval.
Yes.
Even for a young guy. He's not all that young.
No.
Yeah, David Johnson wrote the tune for this. Does anyone know David Johnson? I did not. I know that he was.
I don't want to be
David Johnson. I know. I think he was in Minnesota, but just a guess. He was a church musician who wrote a lot of organ music and choir music, and I've seen his name around all my life, but I've never met him. So. But this is one of those tunes that make your life worthwhile, because people will certainly sing it for a long time.
And as a campus pastor for 25 years, every church I preached in, they always put this hymn in, because it says, you know, test tubes and all that kind of stuff.
Classrooms and labs.
Labs, so it really fit campus ministry.
Loud cheering people.
Yeah, well, as a musician, I like the trumpet and pipes, loud clashing cymbals, heart loop and lyre, and then the curious loud humming cellos. I'm not quite sure of that one. But let's just sing through stanza one. Self-reverting to the original words. They changed a few words.
I exactly was thinking that. He has done marvelous things.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Cleaned up the masculine language a little bit. So there's also another Herb Brokering hymn that I love, and that's Thine the Amen, 826. Let's take a look at that one. No, that's not it. What's the number?
That's it, 826.
That's not it. Oh, I have 726, no wonder. 826, yes it is. Do you know this one?
No.
Okay, well, this is a difficult hymn to lead, because there's very little place for the congregation to take a breath. So you have to play it slow enough that they can sneak in a breath at the end of each line, but not so slow that it loses its vitality. So that's what I always think about as I play it. Okay.
Thank you.
And the tune here is written by Carl Schalk. Now, how many of you know Carl Schalk?
And he's been up here quite many times in Holden as a musician. And the two of them were up here together at times.
Writing hymns?
Yeah.
I think Carl told me the story about that. They were going to write a hymn every day or something like that. And I think they did. And I think this was one of them, actually. Carl Schalk is a wonderful character. He just has more personality than most other church musicians put together. His career has been at Concordia University in River Forest. He has been long retired. I think he's about 89. Well, there's the, you can see the...
29,
so 80. No, 90. He's close to 90. Yeah, 88, yeah. He is a member of Grace Lutheran Church, which is right next to the Concordia River Forest campus, and has as great a music tradition as any Lutheran church in the world. And so he's there every Sunday. He has written reams of choir music that's easy, that's hard, that's challenging for children's choirs. He's written it all. A lot of it was for Grace Lutheran Church. And he's still there every Sunday, I'm sure, critiquing how things are going. But also a very humble man and fun to talk to. He's a kind of a funny guy.
I love some of these words, like in verse 4, thine the kingdom, thine the prize, thine the wonderful surprise.
Yeah.
And then the next verse, thine the glory in the night, no more dying, only light.
Yeah. Great. Just great.
Yeah.
It's clearly the poetry of today. This couldn't have been written in the 19th century or an earlier century. It has something that just communicates directly to us. Gerhard Kartford was in South America for most of his ministry, I believe. Do you know him? Anyone know him? What can you tell me about?
He ended his life by living in St. Paul in Minneapolis, and he had connections with Luther Seminary. So we got a lot of his music and his things for the archives and for the library.
Yes, he just recently died a year ago. Most of his hymns represented in the hymnal are from a Spanish tradition. He has translated them or brought them to us, or in some cases brought them to the Spanish people that he was involved with in South America. But I think the most famous one is Cantar al Señor, 822. Let's take a look at that. Yeah, this was a Brazilian folk song, which he translated. And so he's responsible for bringing it to our world. And it's one of the earlier examples of global music in the church. There are so many hymns that we have now that are from Africa, various African traditions, South American traditions, Caribbean, and even a couple from Korea and the East. That this is something that's, of course, brand new to the church as a whole. This only, we became cognizant of it perhaps back in the 80s, but not really until the 90s. So it's still a new movement.
Susan Real spoke a lot about expansive music. And you go back and you go out. You're going
both important.
Absolutely.
That was a good, healthy way of putting it.
Yeah. I like to use the term that our hymn tradition must be a living tradition. In other words, it has to be a tradition we take from the past, where we've come from, and the great expressions from the past we retain and use. But if that's all we have, then it's not a living tradition. To be a living tradition, it has to be, I have a green nub at the end that's still producing new fruit, and that's certainly what we have here. And as the world has become global, so has the church become global. And I think the two line up and explain why we are reaching out to other church traditions in other countries and to share their songs. Not that we pretend that we're Latino or we pretend that we're African, but we borrow from their tradition just as Germans once borrowed from the French and English traditions and the Scandinavian tradition and vice versa. So we are taking into our own tradition these other expressions. So, Cantar al Señor. I have some percussion instruments to help me out with that.
I think this one is a great example of how sometimes churches think, well, the only way we can do songs with youth is to get these kind of praise songs that really aren't necessarily our tradition. I mean, some are, but I mean, who can't sing this one?
Yeah.
You know, why, and why do we have to have kind of these complicated praise songs that somebody's trying to play in a guitar when this is
kind of,
oh, sing to the Lord. You know, everybody could sing it, so.
Yeah, I can be quite tolerant of other musical traditions, but bad theology I'm not so tolerant with, and or lack of theology, let's say, more often. Do you see any of the other Gerhard Kartfurt songs that you like to sing?
What's your favorite?
Cantata, Senor. That's
what. What's your second favorite?
The Peace of the Lord on 646.
Let's,
that's pretty easy to sing.
Let's take a look at that then. I'll see. 646? Let's try it. Okay, now comes Susan Palo Cherwin. Has Susan Cherwin been here?
Maybe, because they used to live in Everett.
Mm-hmm.
And not Everett, in Linwood. She was the musician there. Which is in Seattle.
Doesn't she live in Minneapolis?
I thought they had been in Minneapolis a long time.
No, well, they had been out here.
They had.
Because she goes way back.
So do you know her?
I've met her.
Yeah. Oh. Can you tell me something about her as a person?
Not a lot. I mean, I don't know her well. I've met her. I just know that she and her husband are both active in the music community. Her husband is the director of the National Choir.
Right.
And they're very active in music in the Twin Cities.
Yeah. Yeah, I know David Sherwin quite well. I've only met Susan once. And I was at their home for dinner once, and they just couldn't have been nicer and more down-to-earth people, but great musician, great poet, just folk. but David Sherwin, as you said, is the director of the National Lutheran Choir, which is probably, I always see the National Lutheran Choir as like the St. Olaf Choir in its accomplishments and its precision, but with grown-up voices. And so it's sort of the best of both worlds, the St. Olaf and other Lutheran choir traditions, which is, of course, the best in the world, but for adult, completely developed voices. So it's a stunning, stunning group. So you can see here that Susan has written quite a number of hymns that were included in the ELW. Eight of them, yeah. And probably the most famous to my mind is 447, O Blessed Spring. So let's take a look at O Blessed Spring, 447. Now this hymn is, I think, one of the most brilliant contemporary poems about the Christian life. Because she goes through the seasons and has the play on word beginning with the word spring, not only the season spring, but the spring of water from the water of baptism. And so life begins with spring. Life does indeed spring up in at the springtime, but our life in the church begins when we're at the spring of water at baptism. So the first verse, O Blessed Spring, where word and sign embrace us into Christ the vine. So that's where we are grafted onto the vine of the church. Here Christ enjoins each one to be a branch of this life-giving tree. And then the second verse, summer. Through. I can never get through these words. Especially verse 4. Through summer heat of youthful years, uncertain faith, rebellious tears, sustained by Christ's infusing rain, the water imagery again, the boughs will shout for joy again. And how many times have we seen that? Young people fall away from the church, and yet the church is still there offering its rain and new life. Third verse, when autumn cools and youth is cold, when limbs their heavy harvest hold, then through us, warm, the Christ will move with gifts of beauty, wisdom, love. And then the verse, as winter comes, as winter must, we breathe our last return to dust. Still held in Christ, our souls take wing and trust the promise of the spring. And in our church, the singing always gets a little quiet during this verse because people can't quite make it through the words. But how beautifully she talks about the Christian life, even at the end, when death is close, that Christ has us, will our souls take wing and trust the promise of the spring, back to the beginning. And then the praise verse at the end. So let's just sing through this. I think this is a great hymn that will certainly endure for a long time. It's also a particularly beautiful tune, again written by Robert Farley. It's not only the words, but the tune, I find soothing. It's a hymn that is at the same time a hymn of description of our life, our whole life, the span of our life, but somehow yet is also a consolation. Yes, there are difficulties, but Christ is there all the way through. The promise of the spring, this promise of our baptism, keeps us throughout. The hymn 548, Rise, O Church, Like Christ Arisen, another favorite of mine. Let's take a look at that, 548. Do you know this one? Anyone know this one? Not so much, yeah. Now, this isn't sung quite as much, but especially the Alleluias at the end, if you take a look at those, the ascending line. Stirring music that goes up to the high D at the climax. I'll just play a little bit of it. Let's try it. I don't know Timothy Strand who wrote that tune, but it's a good one. And it's my hope that it lasts and more people get to know it. 648, while we're there, is also another, I think, fairly familiar one. 648. Now, this was written, the tune was written by Robert Hobby, who is a church musician in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And he's a little bit younger. I think he's around 50. And a little older. And another real salt of the earth kind of guy. wonderful, wonderful human being, as well as a good musician. Let's just take a look at the text of this. Beloved, God's chosen, put on as a garment compassion, forgiveness, and goodness of heart, Above all, before all, let love be your raiment that binds into one every dissonant part. So very biblical in its imagery. Is this from St. Paul, it sounds like. A hymn for use, a hymn that enjoins us to be and live the life from our faith that has all these attributes of the Christian life. The tune is kind of strange. That's a tune that could only be written in the 20th century or 21st century, challenging, and has a wide range, goes over an octave, and has some melodic patterns that are a little unusual. For example, that sol, re, mi, sol pattern is not at all a melodic tune that we'd be used to. But let's give it a shot, okay? I'll try to play the melody as strongly as I can. Okay, ready? The kind of hymn that I would introduce in a congregation by having the choir sing it a couple times. And then maybe a couple months later give it to the people. I think that's important, though, to have hymns like this that are a bit of a challenge, because just like our faith, we need challenges to it for it to be strong. And I think musically we also need challenges for it to be as deep and as strong as it can be. If it's too comfortable and too easy, then we start to take it for granted, and it becomes weak in its total effect. Five more minutes. Rusty Edwards is a pastor, I believe, in North Carolina, one of those. And he's written a few hymns. Like most hymn writers, when a person is a hymn writer, they write hymns all the time. So even though we might just have a few in a particular hymnal, they've probably written hundreds of hymns. And that's been true of hymn writers from the dawn of the age. So, and most of them, like most poetry, dies a natural death when they do. But the really great ones will live on. And in his case, I'd like to say it's the first one. Now it is evening, because the tune is called Bozeman for some reason. I like it. I tried to find out if he was in Bozeman or maybe even Big Sky when he wrote it, but I couldn't find out any information about it. But the one that really I consider the best one is We All Are One in Mission, 576, which, great, 576.
When I was mission director, that's the one that, like Earth and All Stars campus pastor, but mission director, that was the hymn where I was preaching around to with We Are One in Mission.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
it's often used at ordinations, and but it really, as the first two words say, we all are one in mission. It's not just for the ordained, but we are all one in call. Our varied gifts united by Christ, the Lord of all. A single great commission compels us from above to plant and work together that all may know Christ's love. A real mission hymn. Nice finish tune, okay? Yeah, Rusty Edwards is one of the hymn writers that we just don't really hear much about. I've never seen him at an ALCM convention, but boy, just for writing that hymn, we owe him big time. Robert Buckley Farley, I have listed, he's a musician, so he didn't write any of the words, but he's responsible for O Blessed Spring, as we've seen, also by Gracious Powers and then Holy God. Marty Haugen, you all know probably. Does anyone not know Marty Haugen? I mean, not, yeah. You don't?
Nope.
Okay.
I barely know music.
You know his music, you just don't know your
music. Yeah.
Well, that's true. It is not one of my skills.
But if you need to implant it, no problem.
I'm a little more vocal about it.
My favorite of the hymns of Marty Haugen's, and there's many, but my favorite is Gather Us In, 532. If the church is going to talk about being inclusive, this is the perfect hymn.
4641.
Yes, well, that one too. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, right. Yes, absolutely. This is a little bit of an unusual hymn because for a contemporary hymn, it's long. It has two parts, and you think you've figured it out, and then it keeps going. I like, too, the fact that he uses the Mixolydian mode, which is the Gregorian scale that goes from G to G without an F sharp. Or and then he also borrows the minor third, but not all the time. Let's sing through this. Okay. Let's just take a glance at. Okay. Well, taking a look at the other Marty Haugen hymns, which other ones would you like to sing through?
Green's Weeping.
Yeah, 5:641.
We were establishing our new congregation in St. Cloud, and we wanted to commission Marty Haugen to do a hymn for us. So he sat down with me, I talked to him about what we want. He says, I can save you money, I just wrote one. He says, you can use this one anytime you want, and it was all our love.
Wow, oh.
So, that was the vision of our church, we thought.
Well, let's take a look at it, 641? Yeah, this is another one that's long. And, the refrain at the end, all. Okay, let's sing. The Church of England had made it.
Good job.
That's impressive from both angles.
Right. Well, and he is a graduate of Luther College, which in Decorah, Iowa, which is my alma mater. And when he graduated, it was when the Catholic Church wanted people to be able to do the congregation to sing. So for years, he worked in Catholic churches and wrote music so that. And that's what GIA publishing is.
Yeah. Yeah, for years I thought he was Catholic. But I was set straight.
And a lot of Catholics.
A Roman Catholic. We're Lutheran Catholics, yes. Robert Hobby is the next one, and he wrote the tunes for just a couple hymns, but I spoke about him before with the Beloved God's Chosen tune. Thomas Pavlichko is a Lutheran church musician down in Texas, and he's written a few songs, none of which have made it to the top 10. Christ is Risen, Shout Hosanna, perhaps more than any of the others. But I love In Deepest Night and Calm to the Waves as well. And then Carl Schalk wrote the tunes for all of these hymns. And then going to the next page, there's a couple names I want to get to. Herman Stumpfli, a little bit older, born in 1923. He was a Lutheran pastor and ended up as the president of Gettysburg Seminary for quite some time. But through his life, he was a real hymn writer and produced many hymns. As the Deer Runs to the River is a wonderful one. God of Tempest, God of Whirlwind, for all the faithful women. Whenever my church had a Saints Day, that was a woman or a Mary Day. We'd go to this hymn, and there was a verse for that woman saint. So very, very useful and important hymn. Yeah. Yes. How small our span of life. That's. Let's take a look at that. 636. How small our span of life, O God, our years from birth till death, a single beat within the heart, the catching of a breath, a drop within the ocean's deep, a grain upon the shore, a flash of light before we sleep to see the sun no more. That's such a wonderful example of how so many contemporary hymns are rich in metaphor and imagery. it's always been there in hymn writing, but this age uses it like I believe no one has before. This is set to a wonderful traditional English tune, so it's easy to sing. But let's not. again, Herman Stimpfli, a hymn writer who's richly represented, but not known by many people. Then comes Jaroslav Vajda. And my link to Jaroslav Vajda is that I went to high school with his daughter. They moved from Pennsylvania to St. Louis. And Susan Vajda, who I immediately had a crush on, was this exotic person with a Pennsylvania accent. And I thought that was just so intriguing. She wasn't interested. But but Jaroslav Vajda wrote Now the Silence, which is the one that has made him famous. Also, Go My Children with My Blessing. And then he translated the Slovak hymn, God My Lord, My Strength, My Place of Hiding, which is actually my favorite.
I think Neil would like God of the Sparrow.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Let's take a look at the words. God of the 740. Let's take a look at that in honor of Neil. Yeah.
Well, let's change the word sparrow to grizzly.
Or God of the Rainbow. See, there is number three.
Yeah, God of the sparrow, God of the whale, God of the whirling stars, how does the creature say awe? How does the creature say praise? God of the earthquake, God of the storm, God of the trumpet blast, how does the creature say, cry, woe? How does the creature cry, save? I think you see with Vida's poetry that this is poetry of a different kind. Just as Now the Silence is poetry of a different kind. I see him as a unique Lutheran hymn writer with a real distinct voice, and which I consider a treasure. And I hope that we continue using his hymns and his poetry. He's worked with Carl Schalk and Paul Mons. Because all of those people came from the Missouri Synod tradition, and so they knew each other from those circles. And then finally, the last person on my list is John Elvisacker, who, did he have any connection with Holden?
He should have.
Yeah. He really belonged here. And he just died a couple months ago. Borning Cry is the hymn that I think.
It's 732.
Oh, 732. Yeah, I was right at the end, so I wasn't so careful.
I was a Methodist for 10 years. I got out of this denominational stuff. And I thought Borning Cry was a Methodist hymn, because we sang it almost every other week. And I think it's one of the most moving hymns I have.
Oh.
And I have to say, I'm a song philistine. I know nothing about this at all. But the last two artists, have finally written songs that I, coming into a church for the first time, would feel this meant something for me. When I walked in here and I was late, and I apologize, those songs didn't really do anything for me, but I'm a Philistine. But the last two moved me.
Yeah.
And I think our church needs these type of hymns. These are the ones, at least to me, relate. And I'm someone who looks at a service through the lens of somebody there for the first time who's hearing about our Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need this type of stuff. But that's just me.
Yeah,
That's a tough one. Insult me if you want.
It's okay. No. The point that you make is that certain poets today speak to you, and I think that that's true of everybody. But not the same poets speak to everybody. But I think the variety that we have right now, as represented by the ones we've taken a look at today, certainly reach people today. In, I won't say better than some of the great old hymns, but in a more direct way, without anything in the way. It's unmediated. But that's why it's important that our hymn tradition be a living tradition, one that is always growing and responding to the world around us. As the world changes and goes through whatever it's going through, we need to relate that to our Christian faith. Why don't we sing Born and Cry? That'll be it. Okay. Stop there. It just goes right into the verse. Yeah, it's a great hymn. Great hymn. So, thank you all for your contributions today.
Thank you.